It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Well, we've had a couple days with the new iPhones, and we've had some time to play with them, and I'd like to hear about some of the, well, at least two-thirds of us have. Poor Brad, man. So tell us about what happened to you, Brad. Your phone got delayed?
Yeah, I'm guessing it was a deal with Akamai cache servers or something like that, because I was up, you know, I was obviously up because it was here, it was 7 in the morning, but I was definitely on the go at 7 a.m. and it says, please come back. And I quit the app and do it, you know, probably 11 more times. And by this time, it's probably 3 minutes after 7. And it finally lets me in, lets me order my phone. And then I get the confirmation and it says something about you'll get your phone on the 30th. So I won't have it till the, you know, the beginning of next week now. So,
you know, what would have been funny since you're on the phone is if you had flipped off the Wi-Fi and tried it over the cellular network. I mean, I know it's something you wouldn't have thought about doing. I wouldn't have thought about doing it, but it just occurred to me that if you're doing it on the phone, you probably have two different providers. That might have made a difference.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that. If I run into that next year, I will definitely do that.
I know I've done that here. For if something's not loading right, I'll turn off my Wi-Fi real quick and just see if it works over the cell connection. And that's the way I kind of tell if Spectrum is just having one of its lag moments or if it's actually something that's down.
Ironically, when I ordered my stuff, you know, and it went fine, but I decided I knew I'd be visiting my parents the day it came in the middle of nowhere, Mississippi. So I sent it to the middle of nowhere, Mississippi. And I'll be damned if it didn't get there faster than if I had it shipped to Atlanta. Like, it was there by, like, I don't know, 9 in the morning, 9:15, something like that, local time, which...
Lower population, probably.
Must be.
Fewer deliveries to be made.
So I'm not sure if I told y'all the full story of my pickup day. So we talked about this last month where we basically, when they announced the date, Brian, I think you were like, okay, so they're announcing on this Tuesday. We should be able to buy them this Friday, and that means they'll ship on this Friday. I mean, we said that like in August, or you did.
Yep.
You know, you like nailed it perfectly. And by that point, I was like, and that's the 1 week I'm going to be traveling Tuesday through Friday for work all year long. Like, instead of Monday through Thursday, I'm not going to be home that Friday. So instead of shipping mine to the house, I just set it up for pickup at the Apple store, because straight on my way home from the airport is... the mall, the Apple store. So I did that, ran into flight troubles that Friday. My flight was running late, but turns out everything was running late into Dallas. So I was able to get on standby for an earlier flight that ended up leaving about the same time as my flight that I was supposed to be on. They flew us nearly to West Texas before turning back east to get into Dallas because of rainstorms. It was like an hour and a half flight that ended up being like almost a 3 hour flight coming from St. Louis. So we landed and I raced up to the Apple store at the Galleria, and they had huge lines. Like, they had three queues set up. And after standing there about 15, you know, like, the guy put me in a line. After standing there for about 15 minutes, I realized that the lines were the 30 minute pickup period. So there was like, I was 8 to 8:30. The other two were, I think, 7 to 7:30 and 7:38. So they were running that far behind. So both the other queues drained down, and then they got to the 8 to 8:30 line. I get up front. The guy scans it. He's like, no, something's wrong. I have my phone shipped to the wrong damn Apple store.
Ha! Are you serious?
So when I lived downtown, I used to send everything to North Park, which was the closest mall to me. Well, now the Galleria is like 5 minutes from my house, and I'd been shipping everything to the Galleria. I don't even remember picking an Apple store location when I said ship it to the store. And so maybe I've still got some sort of default set to North Park. And so they were like, all right, you know, we know you've been waiting in line. We'll work with you. So they brought me on in, and he's like, we've got them. We got the one you ordered, so you'll be good. So we got in there, and we sat there for like 10 minutes, and the guy finally brought one out. And he, you know, scanned the thing and he started looking at it and he asked me about payment. And I was like, no, I've already paid for this. I'm like, this is Apple upgrade program. I've already made the first payment, you know, been approved for everything. I was just picking up. And he was like, oh, he's like, we can't do this then. He's like, your phone is there and it's already assigned to you. You've already made payment for it and it's there. We would have to completely cancel that one and start one here for you.
I guess because there's already a serial number associated with you, et cetera.
Correct.
Yes, yeah. they when they come to you, they're already preset and ready to go. So it's not like you're just getting a random phone off the shelf and then it does its magic. It is tuned and tailored to your provider.
So they called the other Apple store and said, "Hey, look, we got this guy. He's been waiting in line here. He's wrong store. He's going to just be there at 10 a.m. when y'all open tomorrow. Don't put him in the queue. Bring him on in. Let him have his phone." So sure enough, me and Megan got up Saturday, went over to North Park. I walked right up. I explained the issue, and the guy was like, "Sure." You know, and the next guy that walked out, he came and got me. You know, I'm like, "I don't want it activated. You don't even have to open it. Just hand me the box." I explained to them what I was doing. And he's like, "Wow, that's actually a really smart way of doing this." So because I was trying to switch providers, but do the pre-order. And so what I actually did is I ordered it on Verizon, you know, like selected Verizon as my carrier, but a new line, had him ship the phone there. And then Saturday morning after I picked it up from the Apple store, I walked straight down, you know, the same side of the mall and just went upstairs. I took the SIM card out before I ever turned it on and had AT&T activate it with one of their SIMs in it.
Can't Apple change the provider in store? I think when I moved from AT&T to Verizon years ago, I just did it in the Apple store and they took care of it.
Well, they didn't that morning. I mean, I had, you know, was going to port it over and add my phone and do all of that. So I'm still waiting to see. I've got to wait to see my Verizon bill, whether they actually charged me the activation for that phone. And if they did, I'm not going to complain about it because that was, you know, kind of the cost of doing business in this case of what I was trying to do to make sure I got the pre-order. But I did everything I could to try to avoid that fee, you know, where they activated, you know, the $40 activation fee or whatever it is. But yeah, I walked down to AT&T. The guy was really nice and very knowledgeable. Set up my phone, did the number port, then set up my watch, moved everything over. And turns out, this is kind of crazy, I just saw this the previous weekend and didn't even know about this. I was already going to switch to AT&T. If you're a frequent listener of the podcast, you know I'm a big Pokemon, Harry Potter Wizards Unite fan. So we were playing the previous weekend and we're at a Wizard Tower that happened to be an AT&T store. And so it flashes up special offers when you're on those. They're offering $150 of in-game like credit if you switched a line over to AT&T. So I was able to actually fill out the paperwork for that. And that'll take like a month because you got to like stay a customer for a month and they've got to verify it. Then they send you some sort of code and you give them your in-game name and you get your credit. So we got some sort of $150 credit just from AT&T period for switching a line. And then I'm also going to get this $150 like in-game merchandise for switching the line over. So it actually turned out all good. It was my fault totally the night before. I picked the wrong store. But yeah, so I had my phone that morning and I actually didn't get to set it up till that night because that day was the Harry Potter Community Day. So I just used my iPad Pro for Community Day and played on that and then set up the phone when I got back home because I'm sure we're going to talk about it. But I did the beta, jump through the hoops and basically upgrade, downgrade, you know, whatever it is, and then installed on my new phone. That was kind of crazy.
Oh boy, are we ever going to talk about it. But I restored my phone about 18 times on Friday, so that was an interesting thing for me.
Mine went right only on the second, so I was happy.
Well, I tried a whole bunch of things before I did the nuclear last resort restore, and that I wish I had just done that from the beginning. But for all the years that you have been traveling, are you ever going to get like a UPS store box or something like that, or are you just going to...
Dude, I actually live with someone now where I could get something shipped here and signed for. The problem this year was that I moved in here in January, and I've never actually went online to, like, I think it's FedEx that delivers these, and set up this address as my address. And, you know, like, you've got to do, like, a pre-verification that I can sign for packages at this address. You can't just go online and say, leave it. Like, they've got to have some sort of pre-verification for you. And so Megan works, and I was going to be gone, so they weren't going to leave it at the house. So I just said, hey, drop it off at the store. I actually think I could have played it a little differently. The people I was in line with were not just pickups. They were people who had set up appointments to go in and buy their phone straight up or get in a line to see what was still available and buy the phones. Even if I would have showed up at the right store, I probably didn't tell them the right thing because they probably didn't have a lot of pre-orders that just showed up for a pickup. Those people were actually in line. They didn't pre-order. They just went to the Apple, you know, Apple store, got in line, and I'm going to buy my new phone now.
The old school way.
The way that there's a couple of articles come out where like people don't do that anymore. Well, I'm here to tell you they certainly do because there were crazy lines Friday night, and then we were back at the mall Saturday to pick it up and to play Harry Potter at the mall because it's a good spot for it. That line did nothing but get longer on Saturday, and those weren't pre-orders. Those were people that were just showing up buying phones.
That is insane to me. I don't think I've ever done that in all the years that I've had a since the 3G.
I've never stood in line for one either.
I did it for the 3G. That was the only one. That first year, I remember specifically going to North Park, my ex-wife and I, getting in a crazy queue. Like, we had kind of talked about getting them, and we hadn't made up our mind, And finally, it was like late that Friday, we're like, we're going to do it. And so we went to the mall, and we got in the queue, you know, took an hour or two and got up in there, and, you know, and bought the phones and activated, and we were good to go. So that's the only time I think I've ever done that.
I think I got the when I got the 5S, I had a problem kind of like you. I did the opposite direction. I switched from AT&T to Verizon, but I even still pre-ordered that. I did have to go back to the Apple store and swap the phones when I made the switch from GSM to CDMA. And that's because at the time they didn't make them where they were dual modeled, I think. Maybe it was the 5. I can't remember. 5 or 5S, one of those. But yeah, it's the only time I ever had to do that. I think it was the 5 actually that I did that on. But yeah, my stuff arrived pretty early, but because I was visiting with my folks, I didn't actually do anything with it until Friday night. And I got both the watch and the 11 Pro, the 512 gig, which, wow, that's a lot of space. I had a 512 last year too, but it still blows me away how much. I think I'll be closer to filling it up this year because we'll talk about the camera and the video and the things we can shoot. I don't know if we mentioned it last time. I think we did. Maybe not. But with 13.0 being hot garbage and 13.1 being the release that actually everyone wants to use, when I was at VMworld at the last week of August, 13.1 beta came out. And because I was preoccupied with a conference, I just updated because I had the beta profile on there and got 13.1, not even thinking, hey, wait a minute, this is not a 13.0 release. So I didn't really intentionally move to 13.1, or, you know, like when that happened, and I didn't even think about the ramifications, but we talked about it. Jason, who's not here on this episode, had said, oh, you can't back down from 13.1 to 13.0. I'm like, yeah, sure you can, right? There should be no reason. Some stuff might break, but shouldn't be that big a deal. Holy crap. Broke my shortcuts, which they're still broken. And Jim noticed that the Apple Music, the playlists and library were completely gone, which I don't use Apple Music all that much. Like, I'll do things like play this song or play this station or something like that. But I'm not usually drawing from my own playlist all that often. But it bugged me.
And email was jacked too. Like, the mail app, just, you know, mail app was all jacked. That's the main reason I switched. Well, I guess equally that in music, but they were both jacked when I tried to go from 13.1 back to 13GM.
So how did you make the transition and have everything work? What steps did you do? Because I'm very interested to see what you did, and I'll tell you what I did.
So on Saturday, Saturday late afternoon when we got home, I plugged in my current phone to my Mac and did a backup to the Mac of 13.1 beta 4, whatever it was. I downloaded from developerapple.com the 13.1 beta IPSA file, however you say that. And so then I plugged in the new phone and did a option restore to the new phone using that 13.1 beta 4 profile. Then I restored, when it came back up and said, do you want to set up as new phone or restore from backup? I selected the backup I just made of my current phone that was on the same version of that beta. The first time it failed. I went downstairs and was doing some stuff. I came back upstairs and it was like, wasn't able to restore. So I just clicked on it and tried again. That time it made it all the way through, and I have everything, and I haven't noticed any issues beyond the phone still running hot because, you know, it's a beta. That's always been an issue with betas. Even if they were working fine, the phone still runs really hot, especially while you're charging it. Then I have one app that's not working, but that's an app that always doesn't work when I upgrade because it's a crappy old game. Other than that, mine seems to be okay.
Did you Google for that beforehand, or was that just something you just did on your own?
That's just what made the most sense to me. It was download the beta and put it on the new phone and then restore. I just was trying to get them on the exact same version of the code base because that's, you know, I knew I had beta 4 on my 10S. And so that's why I put beta 4 on the 11 Pro and then just restored from there.
So my path was the exact same as that, but I Googled for it ahead of time because I don't know that I was doing the exact same thing you were doing. But I tried as a last resort to do that because I basically didn't want to do that. I didn't want to have to go and put the IPSW manually on the phone and take a back, you know, restore from the previous backup that I did as a local backup instead of an iCloud backup. I mean, it was the most insane thing to do. So I tried it a couple of different ways. I think I did a reset of the phone first and tried to restore from iCloud backup. That didn't work. I mean, it worked, but it didn't. I still had the same issues. And then I think I got the IPSW and did that, and then still did an iCloud restore. It wasn't until I took the local encrypted backup and the IPSW and completely reset the phone and then restored from that backup that everything worked. So if you didn't Google for it ahead of time, then good for you, because you lucked out and had it work, you know, right off the bat. Whereas I tried a couple of different ways because I really didn't want to have to resort to that. But that was the only thing that unscrewed my issue.
That's funny. I mean, that was just kind of my plan going in because it was the only thing that made sense. Like I said, my goal was just to say, okay, I've got the same version of the OS on my phone as I just backed up locally. And I just back up locally because for me, it just seems like the restores work a lot faster that way than back.
They definitely run faster.
Well,
now it did take for another hour plus for all my apps to download and all that kind of stuff.
That's what I'm saying. You still have to get all of your apps back from the cloud. So, and theoretically there should be no difference between the local encrypted backup and the iCloud backup. There shouldn't be a difference. It should be the exact same thing, but I'm here to tell you it was not. So I was moving from, I had the 13.0 that was kind of jacked up. And not only was mail messed up, but on the new phone, when I restored from an iCloud backup, it didn't automatically register my AppleCare that comes with my phone. Like, there was all sorts of stuff where it was just half cross-eyed. Like, you know, it's not quite right.
And you had me worried for that. Like, when you mentioned that in chat, I immediately, that's the first thing, I went in and checked to see if my AppleCare was showing up, and it did. So I was like, oh, okay.
Well, once I did that, though, everything was fine. The other big pain is when you're doing stuff like that, I didn't know if it would affect the watch. So I unpaired my watch before I did all of that crap just to make sure that when I did the local backup, it would readopt it on its own, and it did. So I never had to mess with the watch. Plus, I was moving from the stainless steel to the titanium edition watch, and I wasn't wanting to have to troubleshoot two different things at one time. I can tell you, I really like the titanium watch a lot. It has sort of a matte finish to it instead of that shininess of the steel, which I wasn't sure how I felt about that at first, but I really kind of like it. It's sort of like having a really tough watch, but it has sort of that same finish that you would see on the aluminum space gray model. So it looks very nice. The always-on display is very good. It's still blowing my mind that at any angle, I can see what time it is anytime. Like, I'm not having to adjust my arm a certain way to see the time, which is nice. I have noticed that the battery life does take a hit. So I do drain the battery a lot faster. Like, at the end of the day, used to, even with working out, if I didn't charge it, I could be at about 60, 70% for the day. Now, if I go and I work out and do everything else, I'm about 40%, and that's at a brand new watch, you know, never been charged. So I don't know if that's going to get, I have a feeling it'll probably will get worse over time, but it does.
And that's a setting you can disable?
I'm pretty sure you can. I haven't really worried with it since I've only had it for a couple of days. I was in the middle of a workout competition with a buddy, so I was hitting that watch pretty hard, and I didn't realize since I was at my parents' house, I didn't plug in the charger. So I put it on the charger at like 42% at night, and I got up the next morning, and I realized, oh, crap, I got in the middle of the night. It's like, wait a minute, my watch is not charged. It's at 26%. Then I plugged in the charger, but I plugged it in the power strip so that only one of the prongs was in a hole. I don't know how I did that, and the other half was hanging off the side of the charger. Like, it was the million to one shot, but I even messed that up.
So I haven't really looked into that much. So you can actually turn off the permanent on screen. Like, you can say, I don't want this to be like this.
I haven't checked to see if it was a setting that could be toggled.
Oh, okay.
So, But I mean, it's not bad. I like it enough that even if it does take a hit, I have watch chargers all over the place. So, you know, if it affects my OCD a little bit, so it's a little bit lower than what I expected, you know, who cares? It's not bad. But I do love the look of the titanium watch. It is a very nice look, a lot better than I expected, and significantly lighter too. I know it's supposed to only be like 13% lighter or something like that. It's not a huge amount. When you look at it on the website, it's like, oh, that doesn't look significantly lighter.
But it feels lighter.
It feels a lot lighter. I held the steel in my hand. I'm like, wow, this feels way heavier than the other one. So just like my 11 Pro feels much heavier, you know, than my 10S did.
Yeah.
So
it actually does. It's kind of weird. I mean, it's not like a bad heavier, but you can definitely tell it's heavier. But
how about that?
How about that battery life, right?
That battery life is great.
Battery life on an 11 Pro is the bomb.
Yeah, so there's a link that I put in the show notes that I wanted you guys to see where it says that all the new iPhone 11 models feature a dynamic performance management system to reduce impacts from aging batteries. So they've put a lot of effort into this to make sure that the battery is going to last longer than in previous models, which, you know, good for them. It's an automatic, always-on system that's more advanced and
it's very impressive.
Yeah, I mean,
I've been super impressed with the battery life, and if it's thicker than the 10S, it's just barely thicker, because you can actually put a 10S into my 11 Pro case, and I mean, it would stay in there and be in there just fine. You can tell it's a little bit loose, but not much.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I didn't try that, but what do you guys think of the screen and the camera? Because I can tell you, I've been blown away by that camera. That camera is as impressive as all of the demos. And even, you know, my wife, who doesn't care normally about those sorts of things when we get a new phone, you know, we were visiting my parents, we took a lot of pictures, and she was like, wow, your camera is significantly better than mine on the 8. Like, this is miles better. And I don't know if it was just the screen or just a combination of that and the camera, but it is outstanding. I mean, I know that that's the big killer feature every year, and oftentimes we make a big deal about it, but in my daily life, it doesn't matter that much. It really made a difference to me. I could tell. What about you guys?
So for me, I haven't played with it as much because it was late Saturday before I really, you know, got it like going and looking at it. But I did that night. I took my girlfriend's 10S and took a couple of pictures around the house where it wasn't pitch black, but it was dark. And did a comparison between the photos that I had took with my phone versus her phone, and it was crazy how nice how clear the ones that I took on the 11 Pro were in very little lighting versus with hers. It was, you know, it's not a photo that you'd want to keep, that, you know, that big a difference. So, you know, I played around with some of the, you know, zooming in and out on stuff and kind of playing around with that, but I haven't taken it. I don't even know if I've taken it. Well, I took a couple of little video spots just to play around with the, you can hold down the button to shoot video, that thing. But I haven't really taken any video of anything specific yet that I'd kind of want to keep.
I was going to say, what about you, Brad? But that would be rubbing salt in the wound yet. So we'll know in the next one for that. Yeah, it actually is really nice. The other thing that I tried out this weekend is, you know, driving 6 hours each way, I was able to try CarPlay, you know, in iOS 13. I've been using the beta, so I've been playing with it a little bit. But right before I left, both Waze and Google Maps got Siri integration turned on. I mean, Google is on top of that stuff. Whenever a new feature is released, like last year when Waze supported iOS 12, that when they announced that was going to happen at the, you know, the 2018 WWDC, within a couple of days of you know, the release coming out, they supported it immediately. So it's been the same thing here. The Siri kit support. So you can invoke Siri in CarPlay and say, navigate to my parents' house using Waze, and automatically, boom, it opens it up, it calls up the address, and you're off and rolling. So that was really nice. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe you guys don't use CarPlay on the same regularity, but the improvements that have happened in there have been, it's been extremely nice. Not having Siri take over the entire display anymore whenever you ask a question. It looks like it does on your Apple TV, where it's just a line at the bottom of the screen. It does what it needs to do, and it's a lot less obtrusive. So that was really nice. My wife would take my phone and look at the picture she's taken, and I never at any time lost Waze or Overcast or any of those things. Very, very slick, the things that they've done. But having the Google Maps and Waze integration, now you lose the dashboard, but if you're driving long distances, it's not really a huge deal. I still find myself, if we were using Waze and listening to Overcast and I wanted to pause the podcast, I would reach down and do it from my watch rather than mess with the display, because the controls are always there. But it is extremely neat.
No CarPlay here, but one other thing I've noticed is that Face ID, it was already fast. It's extremely faster on this one, and it definitely works at better angles. Like, I can be kind of off to the side or whatever, and it unlocks. You don't have to, like, do that whole little thing where you square the phone up with your face and kind of look into it like you're, you know, taking a passport photo or something. Now you basically just pick up your phone and it's just a lot quicker.
Yeah, and to Jason's credit, the thing that he mentioned a few episodes ago, where if you're one of us old people who uses a CPAP, you can record an alternate face. Basically, you can have support for multiple faces. So if you have something on your face that obscures it and you record that, you're able to still be wearing that and unlock the phone. So if you grab your phone in the middle of the night, you don't have to put in the passcode. You can actually just just do that, and it helps.
Oh, wow.
A lot.
Face ID has a Darth Vader setting.
It does. It's great. But I've noticed that in the car as well. Georgia, we're not legally supposed to touch our phones. So officially, I haven't done this when driving or anything. But I keep mine mounted on the dash. And used to, you would have to angle it toward your face, like you said. Now I can just kind of barely look at its direction and flick upward, and boom, automatically unlocks. So yeah, that's it. That's at least a positive thing that that it's got going on there. I like that a lot. So let's talk about Apple Arcade. Have you guys tried it out yet?
I have. I signed up for the trial. I guess it's a 30-day trial. Last week, one day, I guess it was the day before the pre-orders, I was able to get a couple of games downloaded, but they were kind of, I don't know if they just didn't have the arcade service fully baked or something yet, because it would open the game and let me play it, and then it would kind of crap out. I don't know what was happening. So I just deleted the games and waited till the next day, did it the same thing the next day, and everything seemed to work great.
How about you, Jim?
So I signed up, it was one day in St. Louis last week, actually. I just went into the App Store on my phone, and I clicked on it, and it was like, it's ready. You know, it was like before Thursday. I remember that because it was like before it was supposed to officially be out. And so I signed up for the 1 month trial as well. I've tried three or four games, Frogger being the one I've probably played around with the most. A couple of them I installed and was like, yeah, this looks like a neat game, but not something I would play. And I took it off. I was real shocked by the quality. I mean, it does look like, I mean, it's a lot of stuff that I don't know that I would play, not my type of games. But there's a lot of, you know, what I would consider bigger type titles in the list. A lot of RPG stuff, a lot of, you know, puzzle games and things like that. A couple of fighting games. What was it? Sega had Sonic Racing, you know, so there's a nice variety. And, you know, for $5 a month, especially if you've got a kid that really likes playing games on their phone, instead of having to punch out, you know, money for in-game purchases for other stuff. I mean, I know I've already spent enough on Wizards Unite in the last month or two to pay for Apple Arcade for probably like 2 years. So,
yeah, you know, I've decided I'm actually going to give it a shot. I read all the reviews on the day that it was available. It looks very interesting. And I wanted to hold off about it until 13.1 was out so that I could have it on my iPad and my Apple TV. I didn't want to start the trial until I could play the games on every device, just because I'm not a big phone gamer in general. But, you know, if I could sit there with a controller, play it on my Apple TV right alongside my Switch, my PlayStation, my Xbox, then, you know, I might be inclined to check it out.
That's something I did see on one or two of the reviews where everybody's like, try it with the controller. You'll be shocked. And I haven't done that yet. So I'm kind of looking forward to doing that on the Apple TV. I've got a Xbox around here, you know, that I never touch, but I've got controllers, so I can try to set that up and see how that goes.
I find that I play with my PlayStation a lot more than I do my Xbox. I live on Spider-Man, even though I've beaten that game 10 times, and I just got Borderlands 3. I still need to finish Red Dead 2 from last year. I still haven't finished that on the Xbox. I'll try the Apple Arcade out. Of course, not to be outdone, Google launches a $4.99 a month Play Pass service on Android to compete with Apple Arcade, and that felt like the biggest just blatant jumping on the bandwagon sort of thing. But at least the Google Arcade is launching with 350 games, I think, as opposed to the 100 on Apple, and theirs is more of a wide smattering of popular games instead of the sort of curated Apple seems to have gotten developers to focus a lot on stuff that probably wouldn't have thrived in the App Store on its own. It would have probably got lost in the shuffle. Whereas the Google thing just seems like, oh, you want some games? Here's like 350 popular games. Here you go.
So. I'm just chuckling here on mute because, I mean, it's like what you're describing, and I'm just thinking, yep, that's the Apple way. And, oh, yep, that's the Google way. Yep.
Exactly. It did seem kind of funny and sort of trying to the mimicry. It was so blatant and the timing so funny that no disrespect to anybody that's got a Google device. If they want to do that, that's great. It's just kind of funny for all the crap that we hear of Apple, you know, we've had this on Android forever, to see it go in the other direction of me too, guys, was kind of funny to me.
Yeah, we'll give them credit where credit's due. They usually have a lot of features before iPhones do, because Apple makes sure that they fully bake things out before they put them on there. And even when they know something's coming on Apple hardware, it seems like somebody on the Android ecosystem will rush to get a device out there that actually has that. Like, it's already been, and like, you know it's coming for an iPhone, but it's not actually out in the iPhone yet. So this was kind of funny because we've known Arcade was coming, and generally, like, Google would hurry up and make an announcement and it would be out before Arcade actually got here, and they missed that target by a couple of days.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. I am dying to try it out, though. I really am. But again, and plus my wife is more of an iPhone gamer and iPad gamer. So I'm hoping that she will do that with me and sort of give that a shot and see if she likes it. But she likes the game she likes, and I don't know if she'll be so inclined to, with her limited free time, to switch over to something else. But, you know, $5 a month, it's, even if I did it for a couple months, who cares?
I was kind of shocked. Meg played some sort of one of those clear the screen type with the different colors and shapes games. And so last month, after I think one of y'all actually mentioned it, I told her to try out Dr. Mario on iOS. And that's all she's been playing. She loves it. Yeah, you know, it's one of those kind of games where you got the different colors and shapes and you got to like clear them off the screen. And she'll sit there while we're watching TV or something and be doing like competitive games against other people playing Dr. Mario on iOS. So if you're into those type games out there, you might want to give it a shot.
Anytime Nintendo does one of those things for iOS, I'm all about giving those things a proper shot. So yeah, I'll have to do that. One of the things that was pretty funny, I think, is, you know, the requisite iFixit teardowns of the new phones. And we saw that they had 4 gigs of RAM, and generally they were better overall. There was a story that came out when they did the teardown on Friday that bilateral charging was in the new iPhone, but software disabled. But there's been a lot of reports after the fact that no, it's not even in there from a hardware perspective. And I don't think we have complete confirmation. I think all of the stories said updated. No, it doesn't? It looks like we weren't going to get the bilateral charging this year, either from a hardware or software perspective.
Yeah, it's hard from that article to actually determine if they were really putting the charging coil in there in the 11 or not. And I don't know, I guess there'll have to be another Apple analyst to come along and say, no, it's really not, or yes, it really was, but you know, we left it out of iOS 13 for now or some such.
Here's another plug for colors on the Pro models there, Apple, if somebody there is listening, because that red 11 sure looks sharp in the store.
And it's such a great phone. If I weren't in the market for the Pro, I would have definitely gotten that. It's still calling to me, but I can resist.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the camera, it would have been the 11 for me too.
Yep.
And now it cost me an extra $50 for the red model because I bought the red leather Apple case to go on it. So I got my red one way or the other. It was just like pay for the Pro and another $50 for the case.
You know what's funny is in addition to the product red case, I do silicone. I know Jason gives me crap about that every year. Why do you put a rubber band on your phone? I dinged and scuffed and stained my leather case the one time I had it. So it kind of put me off on spending the more money for it. But I also went and did one of Apple's clear cases, which I don't normally do. But on, I guess, Thursday, the day before the phone came out, on a lark, I just decided to place an online order, drive to the closest Apple store over lunch, and pick it up. And I don't know. I've been using the clear case kind of a lot. I'll be using the red.
Is it soft plastic or is it hard plastic?
It's a soft plastic, so I think it's like a TPU. Let's see.
So is it? So it doesn't feel like the leather or the silicone. It's like a different substance completely.
Yeah, it's kind of soft, but it's not. It's a little more stiff than the silicone cases, but it's not quite the hard shell sort of spec.
Because I bought a clear one too, but I bought like a $9-$10 one off Amazon just in case I wanted it.
So it's probably hard plastic.
Well, it's hard plastic on the back. On the sides are kind of bendable still, but the back is more of a, you know, you can kind of hear me clicking on it.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So I said I was going to do it, and I did it. I'm rocking the white.
How are you liking the silver, right?
I call him, yeah, it's silver, but, it, you know, the back is white. I actually really like it because the back is kind of got this kind of glazed donut sort of look. I don't know how else to call it, but it's not a straight white. It's like the phone is silver. I mean, in years past, I would call, you know, we'd call them black and white, but this is more of a silver back with the silver sides.
Like a gorilla.
Yes, like a gorilla. The back's definitely not as grippy as I was hoping for. Like, they had talked about it having a texture, and it does. It's not completely smooth, but it's not much of a texture. I think that's just why you get that kind of glazed look with it instead of just a straight, perfectly, clear glaze on there.
Yeah, definitely not super grippy. I didn't imagine that it was really going to be, but, and I guess if Jason had been here, he was the only one of us who got the green, right? Or did you get the green as well, Brad?
No, I went with silver for myself and the black or gray, whichever one they want to call it this year, for my wife.
I know Jason and his wife were calling their 11 Pro Maxes the big green eggs, so.
It's hard to tell. I saw them in store, and if you just kind of glance, you really think it's just a silver one. But if you go look up closer, you can tell the back's got that tint, and then the sides have definitely got that green tint to them. I mean, I even think that, they all looked better this year, I thought.
I mean, the green to me is muted enough that it almost can be mistaken for gray.
Right.
But if you, look at it straight on, it definitely looks green, especially if you hold it up against another color,
I mean, who at Apple finally decided, all right, we can make enough of the green ones where they all look the same, because that's what's going on. They would do it across the board for a lot of different colors, but they want to be able to reproduce it millions upon millions of times over. And so they, wait until they can. And I honestly think I had a thought, and I was thinking they're less worried about with the 11 Pros everything being exact than they would the 11, but not Apple. Apple probably just cares just as much about the 11s. It's just the way the materials allow them to do the colors a little different on those, I'm guessing.
And, they'll be selling more of the 11s anyway. I think that's why the ones at the lower price points get the higher variety of colors, just because they'll be bigger sellers than the Pro models.
True.
So I noticed you guys put in the show notes, and I know this came out this summer, iOS 13 can delete apps from the update screen. I actually did this myself. I had been using what used to be the, what was that VPN client that we were all very happy with? It was known as something else, but it's known as
Cloak.
Yes, I used to use Cloak. It became EncryptMe, which is a fine product. I just, I have a number of subscription services I already pay for, and I needed to eliminate one. So I eliminated that one, and that was still on my phone, I guess. I just never deleted it. So yesterday I was updating my apps, doing the big iOS 13 shuffle, where everyone is updating their apps all at once for iOS 13. Noticed it was in the list, did the swipe to the right, or is it to the left? It's to the left. It allowed me to delete it from the update screen, which was very, very nice. I liked that a lot. Did you guys use that at all yet? Or I'm assuming you did if you put it in the show notes.
I did it just as a goof. I immediately downloaded the app again because it was actually an app that I use.
I think I did it for something. I forget what it was. I was looking at the list. I'm like, when was the last time you launched that? Seriously, you haven't used that in ages. So I deleted it. I think the best tip I've gotten, I think it was you that mentioned this in one of the Telegram chats, Brian, whereas if you do the long press on the App Store.
Yes, the updates.
You can actually get to the updates. That is a great tip. That's worth listening to an hour of us talk right here. Is if you long press on the App Store on the home screen, the menu that pops up, you can actually go straight to the update stream because the update screen is a little more buried now than it used to be because they added a new tab for arcade. And so you kind of got to go to your account and then go look under there. Whereas with this shortcut from the home screen, you can go straight into the updates, which is just super easy. So thanks for that tip because I don't know that I would have ever long pressed on the App Store.
Yeah, I was noticing that I never used the 3D Touch, and of course now 3D Touch has been replaced by Haptic Touch in the new phones, and I didn't use this a lot, but after we had an episode a few weeks back where Brad had mentioned, hey, I used it, I started to go, and now that it was leaving, I wanted to see some of those things that were there, and since I was getting annoyed by that, I just, on a humbug, did a long press on the App Store, and I noticed that, hey, updates is a part of this. I can do updates straight from here. And, from there, I was all about it. That's my most long-pressed app now. Now, occasionally, I'll do it, like I said, on Unify and some of those others, and it's kind of nice. But, yeah, that one was a big thing, because I think on the Telegram, but it wasn't our Telegram. It was the other one that we were in where people were complaining, and it felt like, aha, finally, I can contribute something to the group. Here we go.
That's right. Yeah, they were saying they were complaining about the loss of 3D Touch. And so you were like, well, we'll try this. Here you go. Here's a little snack.
Yeah, that worked out pretty well. I like that. Let's see. I mean, wow, this is kind of a short episode this week, and considering that that we just had all these new devices, I need more time to sort of play with it and feel like, oh, yeah, Jim, you forgot to mention your part of your in-store experience. So tell us about the little love note that Apple gave you.
So I went on so long earlier, I didn't even get to mention this. So in the bottom of the bag that I got my phone in, it's this really nicely printed, like, heavyweight paper card that says on one side, it says services, and it's got AppleCare Plus, iCloud, and Apple Card listed with all of the features of those services. And then you turn it over and you get all of your favorite content is in one place across all your devices. Share your subscription with up to 5 family members and enjoy it online or off. And that would be Apple TV Plus, Apple Arcade, Apple News Plus, and Apple Music, all listed on this one card that they threw in the bag. And I actually didn't even notice it until the bag had stayed downstairs for a day or and a half or so. And I brought it up to my office and was getting the box out of there so I could actually get the really nice charger out, because I hadn't even used it, because I'd just been using my existing chargers around. I saw this card and I pulled it out. And first off, you know, it's a typical Apple. I mean, it's a very high quality little card with all the information on it. But it just kind of struck me as, for me, it was, so you just came into the store and you bought some hardware, you know, but now that you're home, here's all these things that you can buy from your device that we don't necessarily sell in store. But, you know, you need to start thinking about Apple as a place that you can get this stuff too. You know, and it's really laid out really nicely with just little explanations of each feature, you know, whatever, you know, TV Plus or Arcade and News, all that kind of stuff. And I just thought it was really neat, you know, that just a little small something that they threw in kind of in the bottom of the bag that, you know, if you're paying attention, somebody gets home and, you know, they might not know about Apple Arcade. You know, they don't listen to Infinite Loop back. Yeah, they should be, but they don't. And so they didn't know about us, but they found it in the little Apple card. And now they're playing Frogger.
We should post a link to a scan of it in the show notes.
Yeah, you should scan that for us, Jim, and put that in there. We'll stick it in the show notes and host that on Imgur or something so that the people can get to it.
Yeah, sure. I did a PDF scan, but I can save it as an image and we can just put it out there and link to it. But yeah, it's just a neat little card. I don't know. I thought it was kind of, you know, it's a hardware company, right? I mean, you know, and now they're like, oh, hey, here's all of these services. I mean, and they filled up 2 sides of this card with all sorts of information about all the different stuff that's available. So it's kind of neat.
It's good that you went into the store, because that's how most normal people would encounter this type of information. As you said, to their credit, a lot of the people that listen to podcasts or read the blogs or RSS, they already have that information. And, you know, it would be old news to someone like you, but so many normal people, that's how they would probably not otherwise know about a lot of this stuff. And most of the time when we go into the stores, think about it, like, you know, when I went to buy this case the other day, I pre-ordered it online. I had the QR code pulled up on the Apple Watch. So I go in, they scan it, they hand it to me, and I'm out the door. Like, they don't have a chance to sell me anything because I'm not there to buy anything other than specifically what I've already, you know, what I've already got, or my phone comes to my house or whatever. So I wouldn't have access to this a lot of times. That's a excellent point, that this is how they're getting sort of the word out to people that, hey, we have these other things, as they pivot into being just as much a services company as a hardware company.
The other thing I noticed Friday night that, you know, when I'm sitting in this really long line and waiting forever, the reason that line was so long is because people weren't just buying phones in there. They were buying phones, and then that person would help them transfer from their old device to their new device right there in store. So everybody was getting like hand-holding experience transferring from their old phone to their new phone right when they bought it in store, which I'm like, we got in there and I'm like, that's why this line's moving so easy. Because I'm thinking, you walk in, you hand me the box, and I walk out. Why is this taking so long? But every customer was literally walking in and taking, you know, 30 minutes with a blue shirt or whatever shirt they were wearing that day, you know, to get their phone set up. So that boggled my mind. I was like, whoa, people do that?
Well, the odd thing about it is that it's gotten so much better over time that if you already have, if you're upgrading your phone and you're past iOS 11, which everyone should be, then, you know, you just bring your other phone close to this phone and it magically becomes the new phone. So they've really made that process a lot easier. Now, I should have gone in there. I have 13.1 and I downgraded to 13.0 and now all my stuff's jacked up and now I don't know what to do and please help me because I'm kind of stupid now. And see, you know, watch them sort of just sort of bail on that when they have to.
The blue shirt would have laughed at that one, yeah.
He would have told me to go home and Google it, stupid, or whatever he would have said.
SOL, brother.
Yes.
I will say I felt pretty good and made me look good in front of the girlfriend that they were all very impressed with my plan of basically, you know, ordering on Verizon but never turning it on and just carrying it over to the AT&T store. In fact, they were actually going, the guy had planned on scanning, he brought out a SIM card that he was going to scan just for my pickup that wasn't the box on the phone. And then he realized he wasn't going to have to do that anyway. So he just, you know, he didn't use it. But yeah, he was going to even go so far as to help me with that.
Switching carriers is a pain in the butt. It's way more complicated than it ever should be.
I was shocked that, you know, an hour later, I'm getting text messages, you know, whatever on my phone. I don't know who they're from because everything's still just a phone number because I haven't restored anything on the new device yet. But, you know, I was getting text messages because, so, you know, it was college football Saturday and I'm, you know, in a couple of like group chats where people are talking about this game or that game and I'm trying to figure out who's who and who's talking about what before my phone was actually finished.
Yeah, it's going to be a big pain, but I guess you haven't had a chance to see how AT&T is working for you so far yet, have you?
So far, so good. I mean, I haven't had any issues. I was on with the iPad Pro all last week, and that worked for me fine up in St. Louis. So so far, so good. One of the issues I did have with Wizards Unite, this, I've got another game that's just completely not working, and I emailed them, and they're like, yeah, we're having problems with the new devices. You know, hold on. But for Wizards Unite, one of the features in quotes, is that they're all kind of little videos when you're catching things and you can download those when you install the app. So that way it doesn't have to download them every time you come across something new. So the idea is that you download like 3 gig worth of, you know, artifacts when you're on Wi-Fi. That way you're not doing it over your cell network. So with the new phone, since it just did a restore, it assumed I already had all those artifacts. So every time, like, it wouldn't prompt me to download them again. But every time I hit upon something new, it would sit there and spin for a minute while it downloaded it, and then it would show it to me. So what I ended up doing was, in that case, it was really easy just to delete the app and reinstall it, and then it prompted me to download them all again, and that went away. But yeah, that was kind of a funny side effect of the restore there.
The thing that I worried about the most when I was doing the restore is that my parents' internet is like 60 down versus my gigabit, so I was afraid everything was going to take forever, and it did do a couple of full restores, so it did take forever a couple of times. I wish I had just done what you had done from the beginning, but I was trying to avoid that at all costs, but what are you going to do?
Just wait when you find out your parents are actually bandwidth capped, and then they get throttled for the rest of the month.
Yeah, that would be unfortunate. You're speaking of carriers, too. Verizon had a huge outage on Friday, so I'm sitting in my car trying to get Siri to do things, and I had 5 bars in the middle of Oxford, and it was like, yeah, I got nothing. I can't talk to the internet. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, I thought it was me or, you know, just, you know, Siri flakiness. Nope, they were in a big outage, and they were also in an outage today, so activations couldn't happen, but the one on Friday affected the Southeast, so.
Did you go to the football game Saturday?
You know, I did not. Since you know, I have the AT&T TV that used to be called DirecTV Now or whatever it's called now, I just watched it with my folks from their house. And
okay. I didn't realize you were in Oxford on Saturday. I guess that makes sense. You're going to Water Valley. Friday night, one of the things I did notice is the Apple folks came out and said, hey, anybody here with T-Mobile, we can give you your phone, but we can't do any kind of activations or stuff. Their whole system is down. So they were telling people that in line, that T-Mobile was down, that, you know, they could go ahead and pick up their phone, but they would have to wait and activate it once they got home.
This is where I would normally want to feel superior for all the extra I pay every month. But as you can see, it didn't really help in that particular case. It didn't bite me too bad. Like, it was only a few times that Siri was not responsive. But now at least I know why it was that way. It's like, how do I have 5 bars? And it's telling me that it can't get to the internet. Of course, I couldn't get to the internet. But I would reboot my phone. Everything would seem fine. So I don't know.
I'm glad I'm not a T-Mobile customer. It would have been like, watch Brad throw a tantrum in the Apple store.
Well, remember years ago, it used to almost every single iPhone release day, all the carriers would crash.
Yes, all of them.
Every one of them.
I know when I was in downtown San Francisco a couple of weeks ago that my boss and my buddy had to tether off my phone because their T-Mobile was, you know, they were in the middle of downtown San Francisco and it was zero. They had no bars. And I had five with like, you know, 170 down or something like that. Ridiculous. So I felt superior that day, but not so much on Friday.
I sent y'all a screen cap when I was in St. Louis this week from my iPad where it had that 5GE listed, you know, as the connection type. And we were all like, yeah, that's, you know, that made me a little bit was like, oh, I wish, you know, AT&T, why you got to do that stuff?
And, you know, they're saying it on the commercials, too. They're like, we're making the first step toward, you know, 5G infrastructure.
The FCC really ought to smack AT&T. I mean, hard. Like, give them something where they end up having to pay a few million for doing stuff like that. Because they did it with 4G back when it was still just, you know,
yeah.
3G. Oh, we got 4G. Like, every time a new technology comes out, they just slap a sticker on it and call it that when it's nowhere near that. And it just, it's so disingenuous. And I don't know how you're not, how they're not sued for false advertising repeatedly.
What's weird is I saw that when I was in St. Louis, but I haven't seen it one time on either device in Dallas. Like, I don't know if it was just a specific tower I was on where they had some sort of enhancement and where they were trying to, you know, say they had that there. But I haven't seen that, you know, that particular connection on my iPad Pro or my...
Even if they did, your phone would not actually be able... There's no iPhone that or iPad that can take
advantage
of it.
Oh, I agree. I'm just saying it's weird that I saw that in St. Louis and I, you know, back here in Dallas, I haven't seen it once. So it had to be something that was somehow enabled on that tower to, you know, basically make you think you had something you didn't.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all I have this week. I think if we play around with it a little more, we'll have a better impression next time. And Brad will have his by, well, okay, maybe we need to give him a little more than a week because yours is still a week out from getting there. You know, I'm glad I didn't use the Siri shortcut to try to, because you know when we did the pre-qualification, it was like, here, add a Siri shortcut to order your phone. It's like, who's living dangerously enough to try that? I'm a huge Siri shortcut fan, but I would not have tried that at all.
I used it.
Uh-oh.
I said, maybe that was my downfall, but I said, you know, I said, hey, lady, pre-order my iPhone, and it pulled up the app. It pulled up the Apple Store app, and then I get the, you know, we're not ready for you.
I'm still going to blame your internet provider on that one.
So I'm a little, I haven't done my research, but I did notice over the weekend when I clicked on it, both my Apple TVs are still showing like 12.4.
Yes, so...
And they don't show any updates. So when does that update come out for all of our listeners and myself?
The guess, Apple hasn't said, but I saw some guesses that said September 30th, but the Gold Master just hit the developer portal today, I guess it was. So...
Okay.
You know, iPad OS and iOS 13.1 come out tomorrow, the 24th. So it wouldn't shock me if tvOS came out at the same time since the Gold Master is out. It would seem silly not to. Like, what are you waiting for? It's not like there's no reason not to at this point. So maybe we see it tomorrow on the 24th. If not, it would be the 30th. But my guess, we'll probably see it tomorrow.
That reminds me, as soon as we finish the podcast, I'm going to take the beta profile off my iPad and my phone so that they're ready to go tomorrow just to pick up the GM and stop there.
Yeah, I've already done it on my phone. I haven't done it on my iPad, but I will be doing that on my iPad tonight just to, and I'll probably take that with me into the office tomorrow so that while I'm there, I can go ahead and do that and just sort of be ready for it. But yeah, 13.1 has been pretty cool. Next week or next episode, hopefully next week, I want to talk a little bit more about some cool things like with NFC tags that I want to play with and some of the Siri shortcuts that I've been looking at. One of the things that I thought I'd be able to do, I don't know that I'm going to be able to do, which kind of bums me out, but we'll see. So I want to try some things. But I see people playing with NFC tags around their house to be able to do stuff, and I think I found my next egregious waste of money. So I think that's what I'll probably be playing with. Speaking of which,
an NFC tag on your dog.
You know, that's not a bad idea. But I saw the guy who's on Twitter who used to work for Workflow, whose channels I pay attention to, Matthew Casanelli, who does all the Siri shortcut stuff. He had a wall of NFC tags in his house, it looks like. And he just goes and touches his phone for each thing that he wants to do. which looked really cool. But having some, I'm going to see if I can figure out some use cases to do that. I have some ideas, and I want to try some of those things just to play around with it. Speaking of technology that I probably didn't need, but I'm liking, is my dash cam. I see so many stupid things on a daily basis now. It is fantastic. So it was kind of wired wrong the other day. Every time I hit the brakes, it would go into sleep mode. So I think the technician thought he didn't hook it to a continuous power source. Maybe he wired it into the brake lights. I don't know. But I got that fixed today, and it's pretty great. So being able, whenever you see something that's horrible or a near accident, to just invoke, it has its own built-in assistant where you can say, you know, you invoke it and say video. And it'll save that video so you can goof on it and laugh at it later. So I like that a lot.
So it's always recording, and you just tell it to save like a certain amount that so it won't write over it? Is that kind of how it works?
I put a 64 gig card in there. So theoretically, I could record a lot. And when it hits the end, like if you're driving and you stop for gas or whatever, it'll stop recording when you park. And then eventually, unless you save it, it'll get overwritten. But you can
okay,
but because it has the voice assistant in it, which is kind of neat, you can if you see something immediately that's cool, you don't have to go back and look through hours of footage. You can just say, "Okay, Garmin, save video," and it'll go. You'll hear it go bloop, and it'll just save that off. I saw something today when I was coming home from lunch where a guy did something stupid. I was going to show my wife, but I ultimately decided not to, and. You know, it was just, oh, okay, save video. So anytime, that's a great thing about driving in a large metropolitan area. You will see the dumbest stuff on it. There's no shortage of things that will just entertain you of, you know, near accidents and near collisions and just, you know, fun times. Though, as I say, I turn off the audio because I don't want the horrible things that I say while I'm driving to, I don't want there to be any record of that. So it's all silent. I also turn off the speed recording on the dash cam. I don't want my speed recorded at...
Right, yeah, you don't want any... evidence of that.
Nothing good could come of that. Now we'll have your GPS coordinates on there of where you were, like, you know, longitude and latitude.
Brian's breaking the land speed record across North Alabama.
Honestly ever since I have been smacked down twice, it took twice in 2018, including one time where I was going 27 over, where I was like, you know what, perhaps I need to slow down. So that's,
oh yeah, okay, maybe, yeah.
When I was texting Jason nervously, so how do I know if this is a misdemeanor or a felony? And we quickly figured out it was just a misdemeanor. So you gotta love Alabama for that.
Yeah, 90 and a 60 might be a misdemeanor. Maybe 60 and a 30 might be a little worse.
97 and a 70 was was a little whoopsie, but
I think maybe you gotta hit three digits. I don't know.
I mean, this is probably like an old wives' tale, but I've always heard double the speed limit is an immediate trip to jail.
Well, if so, I could do, I don't know. If I was doing 140, I think they would deserve to take me to jail, but. No, you know, that's the other thing, too, though, is having a dash cam, the way I see it, that also means that I will be driving a little more conscientiously because I know I'm being recorded. I know that there's footage, so it keeps me honest. But honestly, I have been driving the speed limit. I have been so good for the last year, ever since that happened. So, and my wife went with me this time, so I was like, hey, I want you to notice how great I'm actually driving now.
Yeah, I haven't even hit 140 in the S, so just 130.
My speedometer says 160. Can we do it? Let's see. No, I don't want to do that.
You sound like me, Jim. I did 135 on my motorcycle, and I was sort of freaking out. It was,
yeah, no,
it,
me
it
too.
Makes your heart beat really fast.
I mean, you know, my car is a fast little car, but it, you know, it's more about acceleration than it is top end because it's, you know, a little four cylinder. So it takes a while to get up that fast. So you have to have a long straight road to get there. You know, it's surprisingly comfortable at that point, except for the wind is really loud with the top down.
Well, I can tell you in mine, it really doesn't feel like you're going that fast. And in fact, sometimes you're not even sure.
Till
the cop tells you that you were going that fast. You don't really even know. How do you know how fast you're going? Well, not really. How fast was I going? Am I leaving here of my own volition or am I going away in cuffs? I guess that's the question I need to know.
Was I going felony fast or misdemeanor fast?
Yes, exactly. So the last thing I know you put in the show notes that actor Sid Haig, the guy who starred in many of the Rob Zombie films like House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects, and I guess the third in that trilogy that should be out pretty soon, has died at age 80. So you were a big fan of his too, weren't you, Brad?
Yeah, I like horror movies anyway, and I've always liked the Rob Zombie films a lot. And Sid Haig's character was one of my favorites. He was sort of... pretty cool antagonist in those movies.
He was in a lot of blaxploitation movies in the 70s with Pam Grier, and we were talking just before we started recording that he was reunited with Pam Grier in 1997's Jackie Brown. He played the judge that I think she's put in front of for her smuggling money into the country. So that was kind of a, at the time I watched it, I didn't really recognize him because I wasn't really into those at that time. But it was, you know, ever since then, I think I saw House of a Thousand Corpses, and I remember rewatching Jackie Brown going, oh, wait a minute, that's Sid Haig. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he also might have been in one of the Kill Bill movies in a small cameo as well. I think he was. I didn't go check the filmography. He was also in a lot of Saturday morning children's type stuff, like I think Land of the Lost or some crap. I need to go look that up. He did a lot of stuff that you wouldn't have expected. So he was a pretty talented dude. But yeah, he was great in those Rob Zombie movies. So that's kind of a sad thing.
I did not know who it was when y'all said the name when we started the podcast, and I clicked through the link that Brad added, and yeah, I definitely recognize him by face now, and you know, with the clown stuff,
Captain Spaulding.
A couple of the other stills, you know, definitely recognize him. So,
which all of those characters, of course, in House of a Thousand Corpses, including Captain Spaulding, were taken from Groucho Marx, you know, the Marx Brothers movies of the 30s and 40s, like Duck Soup and those types of things. I'm just a font of useless trivia, but yeah. So rest in peace, Sid Haig. That was he was pretty.
Have
cool
either
dude.
One of y'all watched Fleabag? On Netflix, or sorry, on Amazon.
Amazon Prime. I watched the first season. I downloaded the second season to my iPad. I was going to watch it while I was flying. I just didn't do it. But yeah, I did see the first season. Enjoyed Phoebe Waller-Bridge's stuff a lot. I know there's a long time between season one and season two. I think season one, you know, I think 2016 is when I saw that originally. Like, it was a long time ago. And I think season two just hit Prime like this summer or something. So I meant to watch. Well, I know.
Spoiler alert! It won an Emmy last night for like best show or something, and I had never heard of it. So that's why I was asking if y'all had ever even seen it, because I was like, I've never. I mean, it was going up against a lot of big shows, and it won. And so I was like, well, I might have to add that to the list now. So
yeah, it's worth a watch. I've watched both seasons. It's really good.
Yeah, I plan on watching season two. I'm way behind a lot of stuff, like the show on, what is it, HBO, the one that came back with the billionaires. What
Succession.
Is it?
Succession.
Yes, yeah, Succession. I'm way behind on that.
I haven't watched that one, but we did just finish Glow season two, or season three, which was really good, much better than season two. And I did see that they've announced Glow's coming back for one more final season. So they're going to do one more final season of that. And then we did finish Mindhunter. Mindhunter, is that it? Mindhunters on Netflix? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
God, that's got to be one of my favorites. I'm like so disappointed I'm done now, because now I just want more.
You have to like make yourself watch it a little more slowly just so you can sort of savor it a little longer.
Exactly.
Definitely watch Fleabag if you get a chance. She also has a show that's on Netflix that she did before Fleabag. I think it's called Crashing. Not to be confused with the HBO show of the same name, where people were living in like a derelict hospital or something, which is okay as well. And I think she was responsible for season one of Killing Eve, which is a very good show too. So her career is about to really skyrocket now that she's got the Emmy, but she's really talented.
A girl from Killing Eve won like best actress or accompanying actress or whichever. I'm not sure which one it was, but one of the girls from Killing Eve won something, but it wasn't the one that used to be on
Grey's Anatomy. Sandra Oh. Yeah, Sandra.
It wasn't Sandra Oh, it was the other one that won.
Yeah, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge wasn't involved in season two, which would have been the one that would have won something. But yeah, she's her career's really coming up. But season one was really good. There's a big twist at the end of season one that I didn't see coming of Fleabag, and I really need to pick up season two. Well, I think that's that should do it for this week. So I guess unless you guys have nothing else, then I guess it's time for our later fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idol. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.